And we're joined now from Shepherdstown, West Virginia, to talk about the explosion and rescue efforts by Davitt McAteer. He's former head of the Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration. Mr. McAteer, when you hear about a rescue crew going in there, what's your first thought on the task ahead for them?
Well, you pray for them first. And secondly, you recognize the dangers and the difficulties that they're facing. What you have to understand is, by definition, if they're having to monitor the air, that means the ventilation system within the mine has been disrupted, and that they have to, in essence, check the air everywhere they go and try to bring fresh air along with them as they go. The second factor that they have to consider is the stability of the roof. You'd rather have a mine that's 800 feet deep, it has a nice solid sandstone top, but here you have a variety of conditions, and if you've had a disruption like this, you know, Mother Nature hates a vacuum, and you might get more roof conditions and more breakage along the road that they're going. But these teams are prepared, and they're some of the finest. They are the Minutemen of the workplace safety in this country, and they really do a wonderful job of trying to bring out people.
Mm. These miners who were trapped underground, would they have air supply with them, and how long might that last?
Each miner, by law, has stored a self-contained self-rescuer, which contains up to an hour's worth of oxygen. If the conditions were such that the explosion might disrupt the airflow, but didn't poison or make toxic the air, then the self-contained self-rescuer could be used intermittently, and miners are trained to shelter in place to barricade themselves in, and hopefully this is what they've done, and that barricading would allow them to use this self-rescuer among themselves and use it sparingly and to preserve it.
They'd be rationing that air.
They'd be rationing, exactly.
Let's talk a bit about what may have caused this. It doesn't seem like there are any clear answers at this point, but there was some talk about lightning strikes in the area. How might a lightning strike lead to an explosion in a coal mine?
Well, lightning strikes, and I would suggest to you that that's a possibility, albeit I think it's a little remote.
Mm-hmm.
But you could get a lightning strike onto a metal bar that was at the surface of the shaft or the slope, and that might then go down a wire into the mine itself, and then when it reached the face, in essence, or where that was the miners were, it could have ignited some source. Company officials are now saying that they don't see any sign of methane, which suggests then it must be some other kind of thing, probably coal dust, which is not terribly positive because coal dust is a stronger ignition than methane. But more likely and frequently when mines have been idled, conditions allow methane to accumulate, and conditions you're also restarting equipment, so you're bringing in new potential sources of ignition, whether it's by the car that you're riding in or when you're just starting machinery up.
Mm. What can you tell us about the safety record of this mine, the Sago mine?
Well, the Sago mine had, I think, 12 roof falls in the last year, which is a substantial number and a number to be concerned about, suggests to you that you're having a pattern of a problem. It had a number of violations and some of those violations, 185 violations in the past year, 96 of which were significant and substantial. And in the last inspection, which was carried out over an 11-week period, a lengthy inspection, there were 46 violations, and some of these were for the accumulation of materials, the combustible materials, and that could be rock dust. And I think those are the kind of things that you should be concerned about. Doesn't suggest that it's a horrible mine in one level, but doesn't suggest that it's a pristine mine either.
So, Mr. McAteer, no, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Davitt McAteer was head of the U.S. Mine Safety and Health Administration. He's now vice president at Wheeling Jesuit University in West Virginia.